we're going into technically Christmas movies, but they technically have Thanksgiving at the beginning of the movie to signal the beginning.
Well, there's quite a bit of Thanksgiving.
There's quite a bit.
So, I think I have a case.
All right. Well, let the jury decide.
Okay.
Folks, is Miracle on 34th Street, would you consider it a Thanksgiving Day movie? Text us at 218-326-1234. Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses, including cloud solutions, cybersecurity services, network management, and more, all with local customer service and support. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering the community exhibits, workshops, and many events. More at bagleyarts.org.
And programming on KXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org/grants.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Time now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. The Crow Wing County Attorney's Office has charged a Cross Lake couple with 10 tax-related felonies each. The Minnesota Department of Revenue announced the charges in a news release on Tuesday. Brian and Paulina Schindel each face 4 felony counts of filing false or fraudulent income tax returns and 6 felony counts of failing to file sales tax returns. The complaints state that despite receiving more than 65 letters regarding their tax status, the Schindels misrepresented their taxable income on their income tax returns. They underreported or didn't report income from multiple businesses and short-term rental properties for tax years 2019 through 2022. The complaints further state that the Schindels also failed to file sales tax returns for their furniture building business, Timber Creek Productions, and their interior design business, Donick Design Group, LLC. They allegedly failed to file sales tax returns for the rental payments for their 2 short-term rental properties located in Crow Wing County. According to the complaints, the Schindels owe over $98,000 in sales and income tax penalties and interest. Reed Olson of Bemidji has announced he will run for office again in 2026. The executive director of the Nameless Coalition for the Homeless and former Beltrami County Commissioner announced on social media that he will seek to represent District 2A.
A lot of us are feeling the squeeze. Almost every family in north central Minnesota is feeling pressure either from the rising cost of housing, the insane increase in insurance premiums that so many of us are facing, or just a struggle for you or your family to access mental health care or child care.
The race could be a rematch between Olson, a DFLer, and Representative Badal Duran, a Republican, if Duran announces a bid for re-election. The two faced off for the open seat in 2024 after the retirement of former Republican Representative Matt Grossel. While Duran was victorious, the race represented one of the smallest margins of victory for a Republican in a state House race in northern Minnesota. Duran garnered 51.7% of the vote, while Olson came up just short of 48%. Olson says he believes affordability is more than just a buzzword.
It's time to put affordability and access to quality care at the center of the work that we do.
The 2026 election will see all Minnesota House seats on the ballot. A popular attraction at a North Shore State Park reopened on Monday. The High Falls Pedestrian Bridge spans the Baptism River at Teteguch State Park. The previous bridge was built in 1988 and closed in 2022 after severe flood damage. Another round of severe flooding last year fully detached the bridge on one side. While the bridge was closed, Superior Hiking Trail through hikers had to take a detour. The new High Falls Bridge is 5 feet taller to make it more resilient to high flooding. The bridge replacement was part of a $1 million construction project. Several areas that were also closed during construction have also reopened, including the High Falls Trailhead parking lot, the group camp, the nature play area, and multiple hiking trails on the west side of the river. A new initiative from the State Board of Water and Soil Resources aims to protect lakes from winter recreation pollution. the Aiken, Beltrami, Cass, Crowing, and Lake of the Woods Soil and Water Conservation Districts were awarded Keep It Clean grants from the state. The program's goal is to protect lakes by preventing and cleaning up garbage and waste left on the ice in the winter. The grants ranged from $25,000 to $40,000, and the money will go toward activities like ice cleanup events, plus education and outreach. The Beltrami County Historical Society is looking for community members to help shape its new exhibit. The organization received a private grant to redesign its permanent galleries at the Historic Depot in Bemidji. The new exhibit will focus on interactive, family-friendly spaces that honor the diverse stories that shape the region. 10 to 12 community members will serve on an advisory committee to provide input on themes, community relevance, accessibility, and more. The Historical Society is looking for people from a variety of backgrounds, including Dakota and Ojibwe cultural knowledge keepers, local historians, business and civic leaders, subject matter experts, educators, and advocates. Applications are open through Sunday. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXC News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota for local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson. And coming up in a bit, we're going to hear from Trump's Ukraine motivations, selling peace plan to Russia, and FBI inquiry into six Hill Dems. That'll be coming up in just a bit. We receive support from Hung Hydronics, committed to making in-floor heating simple, providing in-floor heating solutions for both commercial and residential. More information at HUGHydronics.com.
And we receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at BrainstormBakery.com.
And programming on KXE KBXE is supported in part by the Bush Foundation, proud to partner with the Good Relatives Collaborative to announce the 2025 Bush Prize Native Nations honorees, the Minneapolis Indian Center, Makoche Agricultural Development, and Turtle Mountain Impact. More online at goodrelativescollaborative.org. And don't forget, around 8:45, we're going to have Area Voices, where we talk about the BSU Percussion Ensemble. Now more from Morning Edition.
Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. President Trump is sending representatives to Moscow and Kyiv to work out a way to end the war in Ukraine. One of his aides is the subject of a new report from Bloomberg. Bloomberg published a transcript of a phone call in which the aide advises a Russian official about how Russia can handle the emotions of Donald Trump. NPR has not confirmed this transcript, and in a moment we will hear Michael McFaul, a former U.S. ambassador to Russia. We begin with the negotiations.
NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez is here to talk about why Trump continues to push even after all these setbacks. Franco, good morning.
Good morning, Michelle.
So the original 28-point plan was widely criticized as a wish list by the Russians. Now the administration says it's updated. Where do things stand now?
Yeah, the Trump administration has been furiously negotiating with both sides, bouncing between a Russia-friendly version and a more Ukraine-friendly one. And Trump now says there are only a few remaining points of disagreement. He said last night he's dispatching his special envoy, Steve Witkoff. Witkoff is the Trump negotiator who is on that transcript. And maybe son-in-law Jared Kushner to Moscow to meet with President Putin. And then he's sending Army Secretary Dan Driscoll to meet with the Ukrainians.
But, you know, Franco, we've been here before. Do we have a sense of whether this is really progress?
Yeah, I mean, talks are happening and ideas are being exchanged. That's something. I mean, it's more than what was happening a few weeks ago. But are they closer to reaching a deal? I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I was talking with Ivo Dalder, who was the ambassador to NATO in the Obama administration. And he says, basically, last week you had Russia agreeing to one plan, and now you have Ukraine agreeing to a different plan.
The problem is Ukraine and Russia don't agree. So you can come up with any plan that the U.S. and Russia can agree on, and any plan that the U.S. and Ukraine can agree on. That's not the same as having a plan that Ukraine and Russia can agree on. And that's their problem.
Last week, President Trump seemed to set this take-it-or-leave-it deadline for Thanksgiving, but he did back off that over the weekend. What does that tell you about his motivations?
Well, I mean, it's another example of how driven Trump is to just get to yes in any way possible. Richard Fontaine served in the George W. Bush White House and now runs the Center for New American Security. And he told me that what matters to Ukraine and Russia doesn't so much matter to Trump.
Trump clearly wants a deal. I don't know that the content of the deal matters all that much to him as long as it stops the fighting. That therefore gives a lot of leeway to those negotiating what the terms of that deal are. And of course, for Ukraine and for the Russians and for the Europeans and for many people, the terms are all important.
Terms are very important, and that's why Russia wants more of the eastern Donbas region for strategic and economic benefits. And it's also why Ukraine wants clear security guarantees from Western partners like the U.S. to ensure that Russia never invades again.
You know, people might remember that Trump talks a lot about the conflicts that he says he has ended. He did that yesterday during the Thanksgiving turkey pardons. How much of this is about his quest for the Nobel Peace Prize?
Look, I mean, I think he genuinely cares about the loss of life. It's something he frequently mentions when talking about the war. But I don't think you can discount his desire for recognition. I mean, he talks about the Nobel Peace Prize a lot. His aides talk about it as well. And Dalder and Fontaine both told me that Trump is likely looking at his legacy. And as any president would, I mean, what better way to be seen as the ultimate deal maker than solving this intractable war?
That is White House correspondent Franco Ordonez. Franco, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
For a closer look at how the U.S. and the Kremlin may be negotiating, we're going to turn to a former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul. He served in the Obama administration from 2012 to 2014. He's now a professor of political science and a Hoover senior fellow at Stanford University, and he's with us now. Good morning, Ambassador. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
So I'd like to start with a Bloomberg report about a phone call between Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, and a Kremlin official last month. The report says Witkoff was giving advice about how Vladimir Putin should talk to Trump in order to curry favor. Now, NPR hasn't confirmed the details of that call, but the president was asked about it last night on Air Force One.
I haven't heard it, but I heard it was standard negotiation. And I would imagine he's saying the same thing to Ukraine. Because each party has to give and take.
Is that a standard negotiation or tactic for a White House official to advise a foreign government about how to talk to the president?
No, it's not standard. I worked at the White House for President Obama for 3 years and then two in Moscow. I talked to the very same Yuri Ushakov that's on this call. I met with him and talked to him many, many times. I never gave him advice for how to talk to President Obama. And I can't recall any time in the Obama administration or studying history when this has happened before.
Why not? I mean, that might seem to be a thing that envoys might do, to say, look, this is what would be persuasive in this situation.
Members of the government are supposed to advise their own president for how to deal with interlocutors, not the other way around. But number two, let's be precise about what he was advising him to do. He was advising President Putin to call the night before President Zelensky arrived in Washington to disrupt the negotiations between President Zelensky and President Trump. And that's exactly what happened. They thought they were going to get new missiles. Tomahawks were being talked about. There was a lot of momentum leading up to the president's arrival with the Ukrainian delegation. And then the day before, Putin called, it appears, because Mr. Witkoff advised him to make that call, and then all bets were off, and we were back to square one in terms of not providing new military assistance.
You recently wrote that, quote, there were signs that Trump was beginning to understand Putin, unquote, but those signs are fading. Could you just say more about that? What do you mean by that?
Well, for many, almost a decade, President Trump's been very loyal to President Putin. He's never criticized him until in the last few months when you could hear frustration in the president's voice. So I was cautiously optimistic that President Trump was beginning to understand he's not going to persuade Putin to stop his war in Ukraine. However, when this plan was floated a few days ago, it just was right back to the old Trump, just giving Putin everything he wants. And that, to me, is not a way to end this war in a permanent way.
But is there leverage that Washington could be using that it is not using?
Yes. I think that, you know, if you look at history and you look at successful negotiations, there's an engagement track and a pressure track. Coercive diplomacy, it's often called. President Trump makes the mistake of just doing the engagement, just doing the carrots, and not any sticks when it comes to Putin. I think wars tend to end in one of two ways. Either one side wins and dictates the terms, or there's a stalemate on the battlefield and both sides have to compromise. Right now, to achieve a stalemate on the battlefield, Ukraine needs more weapons. They need better weapons. They need better missiles for their F-16s. They need better air defenses. And we could provide that if we wanted to help them stop Putin's army on the battlefield. That the president could do overnight.
So before we let you go, do you have any sense of what might persuade President Trump of that point of view, since in your view, there's no persuading President Putin?
I hope he'll feel frustrated by this process when Putin rejects the new peace plan. And let me just back up 1 minute. I hope that's not true. I want to be clear. This war needs to end. The best outcome, of course, would be if Vladimir Putin accepts this new plan that Secretary Rubio and Andriy Yermak negotiated in Geneva. But if it fails, I hope that President Trump then pivots to a much more coercive strategy. By the way, it doesn't require any American soldiers on the ground. They just need missiles for their airplanes. They need better air defenses. And that would help to create the permissive conditions for an actual end to this war.
That's former U.S. Ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul. His latest book is Autocrats versus Democrats. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Six Democrats in Congress say the FBI is investigating them. The six made a video reminding members of the military that they can refuse illegal orders. NPR congressional reporter Sam Greenglass reports.
The video features six members of Congress, all with military or intelligence backgrounds. The message, illegal orders can be refused.
We know this is hard and that it's a difficult time to be a public servant.
But whether you're serving in the CIA,
the Army,
or Navy,
the Air Force,
your vigilance is critical.
And know that we have your back.
That was Democratic Representatives Jason Crow of Colorado, Chris DeLuzio and Chrissy Houlihan of Pennsylvania, and Maggie Goodlander of New Hampshire, and Senators Mark Kelly of Arizona and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan. President Trump called the message treasonous and amplified a social media post suggesting the six members should be hanged. Senator Kelly spoke to All Things Considered.
So we said follow the law. Donald Trump responded with kill them.
The White House later said the president was not suggesting the six be killed, but several reported receiving death threats and bomb scares. The Pentagon launched an investigation into Kelly, and now the six members say the FBI has requested interviews with all of them. Senator Slotkin spoke to reporters in Michigan on Tuesday.
This is a scare tactic by him. He is attempting to use the FBI to scare us out of continuing to talk.
The FBI and the Department of Justice declined to comment. But on Monday, FBI Director Kash Patel told independent journalist Catherine Herridge on her show Straight to the Point that he would treat the video like any other potential case.
Is there a lawful predicate to open up an inquiry and investigation, or is there not? And that decision will be made by the career agents and analysts here at the FBI.
The members say they're alarmed by moves to strike alleged drug boats and deploy the military in U.S. cities. Representative DeLuzio says the ability to refuse illegal orders is a guiding principle for members of the military.
One that drill instructors teach in boot camp. It's one that I learned as a plebe at the Naval Academy that JAG attorneys help commanders train their troops on. Is Donald Trump going to go prosecute all of those people? It's outrageous.
DeLuzio tells NPR he will not agree to an FBI interview and that threats of violence or investigations will not intimidate him from speaking out. Sam Greenglass, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News.
You're tuned in to the Wednesday morning show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning. So just a quick look at the weather today. Winter storm warning advisory in effect now until noon today. 2 additional inches of snow possible. Winds gusting up to 40 miles per hour. Slippery road conditions are expected. Colder temperatures moving in today as well. And a lot of schools are closed around the area today. And that includes some businesses like Bemidji Community Food Shelf is closed today. But let's stay safe out there, folks. If you don't really need to travel, maybe today's the day to sit back, relax, get in that recliner, and turn up the Wednesday morning show.
And look out the window. It is beautiful.
Is it?
It is gorgeous. Well, there are no trees outside our window, but there are trees in other places. Ample.
There is trees in other places. I can't disagree with you there. It looks like the sun is trying to rise. It's starting to get a little brighter, but we can't see it because of the clouds.
It's trying, but it's being oppressed.
So, you know, when you had snow days in, like, when you were growing up, what was, like, your go-to activities during the day?
Make a huge, huge snowball until I couldn't push it anymore.
Really? Even during a snowstorm?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was my favorite thing. I don't know why.
And then what would happen? Just you let it melt?
I don't crawl on top of it.
That is good.
Get the dog to come up there with me.
Would you ever try to dig a hole in it? Make a little tunnel out of it?
Oh, the snowball? No, but usually the snow would get pushed around by a tractor, so I'd have lots of little places to explore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is a wonderland when you're a kid, you know? You can pretend it's all sorts of things. And
gosh, I remember in elementary school, like, during recess, we had giant snow hills and everyone would play on them until one kid broke his arm and that was the end of snow hill time.
Oh, what was that kid's name?
I don't want to say.
Was it Andrew?
No, it wasn't me.
Yeah, there's always an incident. We used to go sledding when I was in elementary school. There was a hill really, really nearby. And I was probably five. I was in kindergarten, so I was probably five. And I collided with another girl on our sleds, and I just ripped my lip open. And sledding did not get banned, though. This was still in the early 80s, and it was the Wild West, right?
Well, that was still going on in the 90s, too.
Yeah.
It was still the Wild West of recess.
I just remember the teacher going, like, it must have looked just terrible. She's like,
That's what you love to hear as a kid.
She's like, could you see if you can do anything about that? I'm like, I'm five. What do you want me to do? Let's cover my face.
So, for me, during snow days, that meant Super Nintendo time.
Oh.
And I would just spend all day playing Mario or whatever. Good times.
Yeah, I probably would have had my nose in a book or several if I was lucky enough to have several. I used to sit right in front of the heat vent or right by the wood stove and just, like a house cat, soak up all the warmth and just read book after book after book. And it was absolutely heaven, especially if you had a great series that you were really, really into and you just wanted to stay in that world. Oh my gosh.
What was your go-to series back then?
I read a lot of series. I mean, I specifically remember reading the Laura Ingalls Wilder books.
Oh, wow.
Huddled up, you know, next to whatever heat source was readily available. That makes me sound like some sort of heat street urchin, but the Lloyd Alexander fantasy books, Tolkien, Babysitter Club, for that matter. Come on.
Oh, yeah. What about the, what was the Boxcar Kids?
Oh, I loved those. Yeah, the Boxcar Children. Yeah. Yes, I loved those, too. All of those different worlds. Oh, Nancy Drew, for sure. She was so smart. Oh, my gosh. So smart and just so classy.
We were also talking about, because it's National Jukebox Day today, and we heard from our very own Tammy.
Yeah.
We had a jukebox in our lodge at our resort. It had a general mix of songs, but I remember in particular that our parents didn't like it when we played the Beastie Boys' Fight for Your Right. And all the guests loved playing the song Minnesota by Northern Light. I grew up to hate that song. That was the late 80s.
The parents didn't like you fighting for your right to party.
Yeah, there's always been an anti-stance on fighting for your right to party.
That's the only way you get to party.
I think everyone growing up should have a Beastie Boys phase, don't you? Especially Ill Communication.
Specifically Beastie Boys?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
You should fight for your right to party. That should be like the ethos of every child.
I mean, I think it is. I think when you have, as soon as they can walk, they're pretty much fighting for their right to party,
yes.
Whatever that means at that age, right? Until they're, you know, presumably a teenager or maybe,
I think it goes beyond.
Yeah. Or however long they're living with their parents, I guess. I don't know.
Did you ever have a Beastie Boys phase?
Oh, I mean, yeah, Beastie Boys was, I mean, I wouldn't say that was one of my particular phases, but I think they're a great band, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were around a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember my brother, like, I miss the days of when it was me and my brother, and we would just, like, listen to CDs when we wake up in the morning getting ready for school, and
yeah.
Beastie Boys was one of those, Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun.
That was the
but
bus.
If it's a snow day, that's even better,
because
then that means, like, we don't even have to go anywhere. We're just listening to music at this point.
That's awesome. It would have been the radio for me getting ready in the morning, for sure. But then on the bus, it would have been tapes and Metallica, what was it called? Was it One? It's the black one. Over and over and over and over.
Isn't that just called Metallica?
It could be.
That reminds me of being on the bus. I had a CD player and I guess I didn't know the rules of society at that point. But I was, like, singing the songs to myself while listening to the CD player.
No.
And my sister was like, you don't sing songs on the bus.
There's a whole song for, there's more than one song for singing on.
Yeah, but I'm listening to Styx Greatest Hits and singing on The Renegade Who Had It Made.
See little Andrew. Tomorrow I got to Mr. Roboto.
Too much time on my hands. Too much time on my hands.
I think it's okay. I mean, it's the bus. They were really loud from what I remember.
Well, on the bus, like, what was your bus driver's, like, go-to station?
Oh, I think it was just the, it would have been out of Fargo Moorhead. It was probably the run-of-the-mill pop station.
So, like, current music.
Yeah, I think
see,
so.
See, our bus driver never played current music.
Unless it was the bus driver who played country. And
oh, well, thank God I didn't have that.
Yeah, that's never been my, it's just not my genre. I've tried to be judicious and like some things I like classic country for sure I like, but 90s country was something else. So
our bus driver played like the classic or oldies station.
Okay.
So it'd be like 60s music.
Yep.
And that really informed a lot of my music taste, I think.
Sure.
Like I still love a bunch of those songs from there, like Grassroots and stuff like that. So you know, the bus is a formative experience.
Oh, it is, especially.
And you learn about the rules of society on the bus.
Oh, yeah, and pecking order, for sure. And especially if you had to ride it for a great deal of time. I mean.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like an actual hour after school, but it definitely felt like an hour. Because we were like the furthest kids out from in the country. So it was a long ride.
Yeah, and that was the same for me. So it was probably 2 hours a day.
Oh,
I mean,
geez.
that's a long, long time. So read a lot of books, listened to at least one CD. or not a CD, probably. Definitely not a CD because I didn't have a CD player when I was in school. But I did have a Walkman, and that was, I just loved
it. The saving grace.
It's wonderful.
So, what are your bus stories? We'd love to hear from you. Text us at 218-326-1234. Were you lucky enough to have a Walkman or Discman with you to listen to music on the bus? Or did you have to listen to the older kids talk about whatever they talk about in the back of the bus?
Initiation rites.
Yeah. But we were talking about the last... Oh, wait. No. It's time for From the Vault. We play something from the KBXE Vinyl Library, and our very own Heather Johnson picked it today.
I did. I went into the vault last night, and it's always...
You got the code. You had the passcode to get back
there. Yeah.
And then you turned the big crank thing.
Yep, and I did the eye scan and everything.
Yep, and then you did your thumbprint.
Yep. at the small blood sample, that's what has been added. I don't know if you've been back there for a few days.
Well, you can never be too careful these
days. So many layers of security. It's always, there's so, like when you walk into that room, it's just potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many adventures you could go on. But I had a limited time and I was like, well, it's going to be snowy tomorrow. So I thought of misty, moisty morning.
By who?
Steli Span.
And that was Steli Span with One Misty Moisty Morning. And you're telling me that that name is not a reference to Steely Dan?
No.
it feels like it is. Like it's. I thought when you picked it, because I'd never heard of them before, I thought it was a Steely Dan like parody band.
Oh, didn't. Yes, that was their parody of Black Cow.
I'd love to hear the parody of Reelin' in the Ears.
Yeah, sure. I think Steli Span predates Steely Dan.
So Steely Dan is a parody of Steli Span.
I think that's how it goes.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. We have cracked this case wide open.
We are putting the pieces together. Oh, my gosh.
Well, that is From the Vault. Away, we like to do this to encourage our KBXC volunteers to go back in the vault and play something from back there. And, you know, there's so much great music, like you said, amount of music.
I mean, it's just so many adventures you could go on, right? I found so many things that I would never in my life have found without just stumbling across it, which I love.
And we have a very exciting jazz collection. If there was any jazz artist you've ever heard about and you were like, but I've never actually listened to one of their albums. There's a good chance we've got it back there that you can listen to.
Absolutely. And it's kind of a weak point for me. I don't know a lot of jazz artists, but I really enjoy jazz. So just diving in is such a great way to get acquainted.
All right. But we are talking because it's National Jukebox Day today. And we heard again from AJ and Bemidji. The Godfather's Pizza, where I grew up, had a jukebox. My two favorite songs on there. We built this city on rock and roll. And the heat is on. I always begged my parents for a couple quarters when we were there, and they always knew what was going to play next. And we also heard from Lisa. We were talking about bus rides earlier. We had a 20-mile bus ride to high school in the next town. Sometimes we played cards, the table being a bus seat we popped off frame. Oh, wow. Some sang songs to rile up the bus driver. Man, what a thankless job that driver had. That's very true. I remember me and my buddies, I'll say their names, Jordan and Tiffany. We were a couple troublemakers on the bus, and we had a bus driver named Herman who did not tolerate that. Huh. And we also heard from Jim Gallagher, great vinyl choice, Heather. So way to go. Jukebox story. Back in the late 60s, I spent time at Fishing Resort in northern Wisconsin. They had a pool table, 25 cents a game, and a jukebox, 5 cents or so per song. Our most played song was Creedence Clearwater Revival, Bad Moon Rising, and Beatles' Old Brown Shoe. That is a good, those are excellent choices. CCR is always great in my book. And normally we'd have our best wishes now, but we don't actually have any birthdays or anniversaries today. So if you do have a birthday or anniversary that you want to share with us, you can text us at 218-326-1234. Or if you have a jukebox story or a bus story, we'd love to hear from you. But I was talking earlier about the tradition that some people have of watching The Last Waltz on Thanksgiving Day. So we're going to play a tune from The Last Waltz. This is the band with The Shape I'm In.
Oh, you don't know the shape.
All right. That is the good stuff. That is the band with the shape I'm in from the Last Waltz concert. What'd
Love
you think,
it.
Heather?
Loved it. Loved it.
We also heard from Michael and Karen talking about from North of Nashwauk. Talking about Steely-Eyed Span was an English folk rock band formed in 1969. Steely Dan was formed in 1971.
It's Steely.
Steely-Eyed? Wait, what are you saying?
It's not Steely. It's Steely. Steely.
Steely.
Span.
Steely-Eyed. Oh, it's Steely. All right, well, we'll get to the bottom of this.
All right. Emily from Des Moines says, in high school, we would go to Paul Revere's Pizza on weekend nights, and I would always play Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses.
Now, Emily, what would you do during the part where it's like, where do we go? Where do we go now? Where do we go? Would you like, because, you know, like at a wedding is what I would do. I was probably like crouch down and like, as the song builds up, where do we go now?
Is that not so fun to sing along to because it's so high up in the
where
middle?
Do we go?
Where do we go now?
Sweet child. What do you think of the, who did the cover? Someone did a cover. Was it, what's her name? Sheryl Crow? Did she do a cover of Sweet Child of Mine?
This is not a thing I would know.
Come on, Heather. You gotta know. You know Steely Span.
I know, and I know Guns N' Roses, too, but not Sheryl Crow covers.
We also,
that would not be my Jeopardy category.
We also heard from Kim. I also grew up on a resort. I loved it when my grandpa would put money in the jukebox and dance around with us. It's one of my best memories of him. Also, we had a guest who played the Eagles over and over again. Life in the Fast Lane. I knew every word of that song, but I still like it. Thanks for playing Jukebox Hero. I love Foreigner. Well, thank you, Kim. And thank you for listening. And you are tuned in to the Wednesday morning show. We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hemming, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
And we receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. Move it. Move more at moveitrealestate.com.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their energy-forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward. Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition talking about Denver Bison Harvest.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. The city of Denver bought a handful of bison more than a century ago, displaying the animals as a Wild West novelty. Who knew? Colorado Public Radio's Sam Brash did and reports that now the herd helps Denver's indigenous residents connect with their heritage. We should warn you, you'll hear a rifle shot about a minute into this story.
It's a cool, clear morning in Daniels Park, a rocky ridge that's actually outside the city with a wide view of its skyline and the Rocky Mountains. That's where Lewis Tallbull welcomes more than 100 visitors.
I'd like to say good morning to each and every one of you. It's good to see you.
A fenced area nearby holds half of Denver's roughly 70 bison, known as buffalo in native communities. For the last 7 years, it's given one annually to the Tallbull Memorial Council, a cultural preservation group founded by Lewis's grandfather, a legendary Cheyenne activist who made a point of living in the tribe's ancestral homelands in Colorado. And the group slaughters the buffalo each fall.
A young warrior's gonna lose his life today, but in that way, he's going to provide life.
After a ceremony, Tallbull leads the crowd to the edge of the fence. He takes a handful of men through a gate towards a corral holding a 600-pound bull. We watch one of them steady a rifle and fire. The buffalo slumps to the ground. Bison harvests are common on reservations. Many tribes keep herds to restore the species and maintain a reliable food source. During the recent government shutdown, for example, some tribes slaughtered bison for meat to make up for partial cuts to federal food benefits.
Us Indians who were forced to live in the city, we don't have anything like that.
And census data shows nearly three-quarters of American Indians live in urban areas.
That's what we're doing, is we're bringing these traditional ways and these bison harvests that only happen on reservations to the inner city urban communities.
That's possible in Denver. The city first obtained bison around 1900 from Yellowstone in northwest Montana. It kept them corralled as zoo animals. A few decades later, it moved them into the city's far-flung mountain park system. And to control their numbers, it historically held an annual sale, says Denver Park Ranger Ryan Fillion.
Where we would auction off our calves every single year, and you could have come out and bought a baby bison.
The city started to shift its strategy in 2018. Today, it no longer holds auctions and instead transfers excess bison to tribal nations, and it allows the Tall Bull Memorial Council to hold these events. That still involves some modern equipment. After elders pay their respects, a front loader carries the bison to a butchering area. 9-year-old Malcolm Sanchez is pumped to participate.
I think I might get in on that, on cutting that bison.
You can do it?
I've cut things before.
And he's ready for his mom's bison stew. It's a meal that makes him proud to be native. His family doesn't belong to a single tribe.
The only tribe I know of that I'm like part of is the Puebloan tribe. I don't know the rest of them because my family is like a big mix.
That's common in Denver, a city known as a crossroads for indigenous people. Tall Bull is grateful Denver's bison can help bind that community together.
Re-establishing our identity as Indian people, 1% each day is good enough. So this right here is a huge step for us.
He hopes to someday organize multiple harvest events every year. Beyond feeding people, he says it's a way to connect Denver's buffalo to their own heritage. Not as curious emblems of the Old West, but cultural sustenance for Native people. For NPR News, I'm Sam Brash in Denver.
This is NPR News.
And you are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning. 2025 may be the perfect time for you to give an end-of-the-year gift to KAXC. 2026 will introduce changes in tax rules concerning charitable deductions. Consider working with a financial advisor to see if right now is the right time to increase your support of people-powered KAXE.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com. So we've been talking about, because it's National Jukebox Day today.
Yeah.
And I just remembered a story of a recent jukebox story where I was at a bar and it was like, I think it was like a Saturday night, and someone played Believe by Cher, you know?
Do you believe in love after love?
And the whole, everyone, because I was sitting at the bar itself, everyone at the bar plus the bartenders just started singing along to the song. And then when the chorus hit, like, oh my gosh, everyone was just like, do you believe in love after love? It was like such a, I've never had a moment like that at the bar before, where just everyone in the bar was just singing along to one song. So it felt like we were all heartbroken that night for some reason.
And Cher. Cher mended that heart.
Cher brought us together.
And she brought you together. I mean, that's the power of Cher.
And the power of music. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
Absolutely.
So we would love to hear your jukebox stories today. It is National Jukebox Day. Text us at 218-326-1234. And don't forget, in less than an hour, we're going to have Area Voices, my conversation with Eric Sundin, about the upcoming BSU Percussion Ensemble that is going on next week on December 5th. Lots of things going on at the BSU music scene right now.
Yeah.
With a lot of concerts and recitals going on. I got a chance to see the BSU Symphonic Band last week, and that was a great time.
Yes. And there's always so much good stuff to go over and listen to. It's It's such an amazing resource, and we're so lucky to have it in our region.
Yeah, absolutely. With all the different like symphonies in our area and like local bands, like we're pretty lucky. We have such a wealth of music available. Lucky.
And I have a budding percussionist at home, so I'm really, really looking forward to going to the percussion event next week.
So is he going to... So I'm assuming he's dabbling in, like, the drums part of percussion. Is he dabbling at all in, like, the marimba or the xylophone?
Oh,
not
yet.
Or the glockenspiel.
The glockenspiel. Well, we have a glockenspiel at home.
You do?
Yeah, we have a regular size. No, we really don't. he's kind of a little rock and roller. So, yeah.
You think one day he'll be a jukebox hero?
I don't know.
Can a drummer be a jukebox hero? It seems in the song they're establishing guitarists can be.
Yeah, well, that's guitarist energy right there, isn't it?
That's how they see themselves.
Exactly. drummers are they're there to do their thing, right?
I feel like the drummer is the most valuable person in the music scene, because getting a drummer is the hardest thing, I think, for a band.
Is it?
Because they have a bunch of the equipment. And
it's
like,
true, and it's not.
You got to be committed to be a drummer, because once you get that drum set, you're like, you better be playing that drum set.
Absolutely. I agree. Or a bucket, at least.
A bucket, yeah.
Bucket is handy. But the future is wide open.
So we'll keep tabs on his career in the drumming world.
Yeah.
And you'll let us know if he joins a band.
Well, obviously, we'll be playing.
Is there talks? Oh, you're going to be the band.
No, I'm not going to be in the band. No, we'll be playing him, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. No, I have no musical talent whatsoever, unfortunately. I wish.
Really? You weren't in, like, band in elementary school or anything?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I have talent.
What was your instrument?
Flute.
Wow. So.
I played for years and years. And, I could play. I could, you know.
So if like a percussion or if a music ensemble was like, Heather, we desperately need a flute player right now. We need you to step in. We have 2 days to rehearse. Would you do it?
No.
What?
It's been years.
You wouldn't save the ensemble?
No.
Oh, that's disappointing, Heather.
Kazoo. I play kazoo.
Okay. Do you still have a flute?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us your jukebox stories, 218-326-1234. Now it's time for our KXC album of the week. This year, it's Vendrán Suaves Lluvias by Silvana Estrada. Estrada is a Mexican singer-songwriter releasing her second album. Her debut in 2022 won her Best New Artist at the Latin Grammys. And the song I'm going to play for you is called No Te Vayas Sin Saber.
Ya no queda nada que pueda salvarse. Tiramos escombros, lloramos tal vez. Guardamos en cajas miedos y reproches. Tirando los dados se aprende a perder. No te vayas sin saber que yo te quiero y siempre te querré. No te vayas sin saber que aunque apostamos lo que apostamos, esto no siempre sale bien. Vendrán suaves lluvias y el tiempo prudente de un año y mil días a volverte a ver. Y entonces la herida, lo que ahora es urgente, será una ventana con vistas de ayer. No te vayas sin saber que yo te quiero y siempre te quiero. cierre. No te vayas sin saber que aunque apostamos lo que apostamos, esto no siempre sale. Esto no siempre sale bien.
This is the set list on KAXC, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are taking a look at four shows this Friday and Saturday, November 28th and 29th, in Grand Rapids and La Porte. First up, Doyle Turner and Sarah Morris are playing at the Popple Bar in La Porte Friday at 6 p.m. The pair collaborated on Turner's latest Paper Maps release, and Morris just put out a new album called Say Yes in October. Both are talented songwriters and singers who blend jazz, pop, and Americana. Friday in La Porte at the Popple Bar. Next up, a pair of Mankato songwriters are playing at Rapids Brewing Friday night at 6. Nate Boots is an Americana and folk musician who has led bands like The High Horses and Porch Lights. He just released a solo album called A Stretch of a Wing, a Leap. Murphy is an up-and-coming folk rocker who recently released a great new single called Sugar. Nate Boots and Mal Murphy in Grand Rapids this Friday. It's a busy night in Rapids, with Brothers Burn Mountain coming to Clocko Brewing at 7 p.m. The eclectic duo from Cotton, Minnesota recently released a Best Of album to celebrate their 25-year anniversary. Their live show features a drum-heavy mix of psychedelic blues, rock, and folk music, Friday at 7 p.m. Finally, Dave Simonette is playing at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids Saturday at 7. The Trampled by Turtles frontman is returning after a sold-out Dead Man Winter show in early 2024. Since then, he released 5 new original songs recorded by both Trampled and Dead Man Winter and collaborated with Alan Sparhawk of Low. It is Dave Simonette this Saturday at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
And that was the set list before we heard from our album of the week, Silvana Estrada. The song was No Te Vayas Sin Saber from her album Vendrán Suaves Lluvias.
I am really liking this album of the week.
It is a very good album of the week. And then we just heard from Malachi Coons on the set list,
yeah,
which you can always check on our website, kxe.org, along with the latest Bright Spot, Area Voices, Up North Report. All that stuff is on our website. But we also heard from Malachi Coons on the text line.
It's all Malachi.
Now, he doesn't have a story about the jukebox, but this is his hot take about them. No one should be allowed to put songs on the jukebox from their phone. You should have to walk over and change it in front of everyone so the crowd can judge you if you made a bad choice.
100% agree.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. There should be some, not rite of passage, but
accountability.
Accountability. That's exactly the right word. There should be an accountability when it comes to the jukebox.